I know the Minister of Defence, Bella cut in, and Admiral Keita. Beauty, Sean nodded. If you get the boats, see if you can also get permission for a dozen or so boat handlers to volunteer for a little extracurricular fun and games. Those naval commandos are hot babies, and they'll fall over themselves for a chance at a good Barney. I'll play up the fact that it's an ANC training base and that we're going to do a hose down and that we'll be doing them a good turn.
I also know the minister. I will go with Bella to see him, Santon agreed.
I guarantee you all the special equipment you need. Just give me a list, Sean. I'll have it ready by tomorrow morning. What about weapons and men? Scouts, Sean told them. They don't come any better. I trained them myself. I'll need about 20 men. I know exactly who I want. I'll talk to Roland Ballantyne right away. Things are pretty quiet up there in Rhodesia at the moment, the rainy season. He'll let me have them. I might have to break one of his legs, but he'll let me have them. They'll need a couple of days of boat training, but they'll be ready to go by the end of next week. He looked across at Isabella. It all depends on you now, Bella. You are our hunting dog. Lead us to them, lass. 11 days after she sent the Red Rose coded confirmation that Capricorn Chemicals had successfully tested Syndex 25, Isabella received permission and instructions for a visit to Nicholas. She was instructed to take the South African Airways flight to London that refueled in Kinshasa on the Congo River, and to disembark at this stopover instead of continuing on to London. She would be met at Kinshasa Airport.
It's looking good, Sean was jubilant, as he placed his finger on the map. Here's Kinshasa. It's within 300 or 400 kilometres of the expected target area. They're going to pick you up on the doorstep, not the roundabout route via Nairobi and Lusaka that they sent you on last time.
He looked across at Isabella.
So they want you to take next Friday's flight. If it works out, that means you'll probably be in position on Saturday or Sunday at the very latest. We will sail from Walvis Bay in Lancer just as soon as I can get up there. The boys have finished their training and all the equipment is on board Lancer. They've been sitting around doing nothing for almost a week. They'll be glad to be on their way.
He studied the map and then punched his calculator.
We can be in position 100 nautical miles off the mouth of the Congo River by Monday the 12th. How does that suit you, Gary?
Gary stood up and went to the map.
Well, I'll be waiting with the Lear at Windhoek Airport, here. I will make my first flyover on the night of Monday the 12th. I'll have to head out to sea at least 500 miles before I can turn back. That's the estimated range of the Cuban radar net in southern Angola. 500 miles is well beyond the operational range of the MiG squadron at Lubango.
He touched the Cuban base on the map.
All right, then I'll hit the coast at the mouth of the Congo here and fly south down the coast until I pick up the signal of Bella's transponder.
Hold on, Gary, Shaza intervened.
How's that working out? The boys at Courtney Communications have done a damn fine job in the short time they had available.
He opened his briefcase.
This is it.
A bicycle pump? Shaza asked.
Apparently Nicky is a soccer star. He asked Bella to bring him a new ball, and he complained that they had to keep pumping his old ball. The pump is a natural accessory to go with the ball. It should arouse no suspicion. This one is in perfect working order. He demonstrated a few strokes of the pump, and the air hissed out in a satisfactory manner. The transponder is fitted into the handle of the pump. It has a 30-day battery life. It is activated simply by twisting the handle like this. He showed them. Well, there is one drawback. We've had to make the transponder small enough to fit into the handle, and in the process we have been forced to reduce the power of the signal. It has a range of less than 12 kilometres, even with the very sensitive antennae that we fitted into the Lear. I'll have to fly in that close before I pick up the signal.
What about Cuban fighters in the north? Shaza asked anxiously.
And according to South African intelligence, the nearest squadron is based at Sarima. I'll make one quick run down the coast. As soon as I pick up Bella's signal, I'll head out back to sea. I worked it out on paper. Even if Cuban radar picks me up as I enter Angolan airspace, and they immediately scramble a flight of MiGs from Sarima, I should be able to turn out and run for it before they can catch me.
What about SAMs? Shaza persisted.
Intelligence reports the Cuban SAM regiments are all in the south.
And if intelligence is wrong?
Oh, come on, Pater. Sean's running a hell of a lot more risk than I am. Yes, but this kind of thing is Sean's job, and he hasn't got a wife and a flock of kids.
Do we want to get Nicky out, or what?
Gary turned his back on his father, ending the exchange. All right, where was I? Yeah, okay. I pick up Bella's signal, I turn out to sea, and make radio contact with Lancer as she lies off the Congo mouth. I give them a fix on the base, and then I just come home. I rather think, Shaza drawled nonchalantly, that I'll go along with you for the ride, Gary. Come on, Pater, your Battle of Britain vintage. Act your age. I taught you to fly, my boy, and I can still fly circles around you any day of the week. Gary glanced across at Nana for support. Her expression was stony. He threw his hands in the air and began to grin. Welcome aboard, skipper, he acquiesced.
Goodbye, Nana, Isabella hugged the old lady with a sudden despairing strength. Pray for us.
You just bring my great-grandson here to me, missy. He and I have got a lot of catching up to do.
Isabella turned to her father.
I love you, Daddy.
Not as much as I love you.
I've been so stupid. I should have trusted you. I should have come to you right in the beginning, she gulped. I've done terrible things, Daddy. Things I haven't told you about yet. I wonder if you'll ever be able to forgive me.
You're my girl, his voice was husky. My very special, my only girl. Come back safely and bring your baby with you. She kissed him and held him hard. Then she whirled and almost ran through the international departures gate of Jan Smuts Airport. Santan and Shaza stood staring after her, long after she had disappeared. Overhead, the airport loudspeaker system was already calling her flight.
This is the final call for all passengers travelling on the South African Airways SA-516 to Kinshasa and London.
Santan turned away and took Shaza's arm.
She limped heavily on her stick. Her leg always seemed to get worse when she was worried or under unusual strain.
The chauffeur had the car parked at the main entrance, although one of the traffic constables was trying to move him on. Shaza settled Santan in the back seat and then went round to the other door and climbed in beside her.
There is something we haven't talked about yet, Santan took his hand.
Yes, Shaza agreed. I know what you were going to ask. What have they extorted from Bella? What price have they made her pay?
She has been working for them for years, ever since the birth of the child, so it is obvious now.
I don't want to think about it, Shaza sighed. But I know we'll have to face it sooner or later. This bastard who's tied her up is a general in the KGB, so we know who Bella's masters are.
Shaza? Santan hesitated, and then her voice firmed.
You recall the skylight scandal?
I never forget it.
There was a leak? A traitor? Santan pressed on doggedly.
Bella knew nothing about skylight. I was very careful to keep her out of it, Shaza said hotly.
Do you remember the Israeli nuclear scientist who came down to Dragon's Fountain? What was his name? Aaron somebody. Bella had a little fling with him. You told me that her name was in the security register at Pelindaba. She spent the night with him.
Mother, you're not suggesting...
Shaza broke off.
My God, do you realize what information she has had access to over the years? As a senator, and as my assistant, most of the sensitive arms corps projects have passed over her desk.
The Syndex project at Capricorn, Santan nodded. She was at the tests only a few weeks back. Why is she being allowed to see Nicholas now? Has she given them some special piece of information, do you think?
There was silence for a long time. And then Shaza asked softly,
Where does loyalty to the family and to one of our children end, and loyalty and patriotic duty to our country begin?
I think that you and I will have to face that question very soon, she sighed.
But let's see this other business through first.
Lancer was tied up at the hospital jetty alongside the Courtney canning factory in Walvis Bay. She was a 250-foot stern trawler, but she had the sleek lines of a modern cruise liner. She had been built to work in any fishery, in any ocean, to get there fast, stay at sea for months at a time, and then to get back to port just as fast.
Sean stood on the jetty and looked her over. He did not like her bright yellow paintwork. It was much too visible. On the other hand, her stern chute would make for easy launching and recovery of the landing boats. Anyway, it was much too late to do anything about the paintwork now, he decided. Half the scouts were lining the rail of the trawler, and as soon as they recognized him, they launched into a chorus of, "Why was he born so beautiful?" Sean gave them the finger. "Ah, no goddamn respect," he lamented, and ran up the gangway. They were delighted to see him, and crowded around him to shake his hand. Much of their enthusiasm was a symptom of boredom. For these highly trained fighting men, a week of inactivity had been almost insupportable. They were all dressed like trawlermen, in worn and faded jeans, tattered woolen jerseys, and an assortment of caps and balaclava helmets. Sergeant Major Esau Gondele was a full-blooded Matabele, an old comrade in a dozen desperate contacts and battles. He saluted Sean and then grinned as Sean punched his arm. "You're out of uniform, Esau. Take it easy, brother." 12 of the 20 scouts that Sean had chosen were Matabele. The others were young white Rhodesians, nearly all of them the sons of ranchers and game wardens and miners who had been brought up in the bush. In the scouts there was no awareness of colour. As Esau Gondele once remarked to Sean, "The best cure for racism is have somebody shoot at you. Man, it does not matter then what colour the arse is that comes to save yours, black or white, you're ready to give it a big fat kiss." Sean had worried about the naval commandos from Simonstown who were handling the inflatables. They were all tough young Afrikaners. They might have trouble fitting into this multiracial team. "How are you going to get on with the rock spiders?" Sean asked Esau Gondela, using the pejorative slang for an Afrikaner. "Some of them were my best friends already, but still I wouldn't want one of them to marry my sister," he chuckled. "No, seriously, Sean, they're all right. They know their job. I told them they don't have to call me Basi, and they saw the joke." "Okay, Sergeant Major. We're leaving port at nightfall. It's unlikely that there'll be anybody here taking an interest in us, but we'll take no chances. You and I are going to check equipment before we sail, and then we'll brief the boys as soon as we cast off." The crew accommodation was cramped and Spartan. The scouts and the six commandos crowded into the mess, perched on the table and the bunks. Within minutes the air was fogged with cigarette smoke, and Lancer pitched and rolled heavily to the thrust of the cold green Benguela current. All the scouts that Sean had chosen were proven sailors, who had done boat patrols on the choppy waters of Lake Kariba. Mal de Mer was the reason that he had not sent for Matatu. The little Ndorobo would have been puking his heart out by now. It felt strange going into an operation without Matatu at his side, like going on a journey without a St. Christopher. Matatu was his good luck charm. He put that thought out of his mind and looked round the crowded mess. "Can you all see?" Sean had tacked the maps up on the bulkhead. There was a chorus of assent. "We are heading up here," he prodded the map, "and the mission is to pick up two prisoners, a woman and a child." There were groans and raspberries of mock disappointment, and Sean grinned. "It's okay, don't panic. There'll be plenty of gooks. It's hot guns all the way, gentlemen, and open season." The groans turned to ironic cheers, and Sean waited for them to settle down. "This is a sketch map of the target area. As you can see, it's pretty rough, but it gives you some idea of what to expect. I expect to find the prisoners being held in this compound here near the beach, probably in this hut. I will lead the rescue party. We will go in with three of the boats." He noticed Esau Gondela squatting on one of the bunks with a South African naval commander squashed up on each side of him. The three of them were sharing a cigarette, passing the butt from hand to hand as they listened to his briefing. "What price apartheid now?" Sean smiled to himself and went on.